You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Lucas, I just want to shake and bake like Kyrie one day. Just once I want to shake and bake like Kyrie.
I think we all do. I think we're all in the same boat there.
You have not been on in some time, Lucas, and you know what? As the host of the show, I take full responsibility. It's been a crime, but it's good to have you back on finally.
It's good to be back. It has been too long, but it's good to be back.
Alrighty, so I want to dive right into it because, as usual, we have so much to talk about and not enough time to talk about it. First of all, because you are the expert, the zone coverage expert on all that is injuries and health and athlete injuries, I wanted to get your take on two premier injuries, the Blake Griffin and the John Wall. Now, they've been out for a little bit, but these ones are interesting to me because not only does most of the franchise's kind of hopes and dreams of an established future hang on these two guys, but the knee injuries seem to be those that you can bring them back at a certain time. Both doctors gave X times that you can bring these players back, but they're one of those things where, do you bring them back because they have had injury before? Do you bring them back too soon and risk that, or do you hold them out too late and maybe lose some extra games because of it? Now, it's a little bit less tenuous of a situation because, like we saw the other night with the 51 points, Bradley Beal is balling out for the Washington Wizards. I think you can hold John Wall out longer if you feel like you have to, and it's not going to hurt them as much. But the Blake Griffin injury is a really interesting one, so I'm going to save that one for second. First of all, John Wall, what are your thoughts on his knee injury, and what do you think the team is thinking just as far as his progress right now?
Yeah, injuries like the one John Wall had are they're kind of tough to provide a prognosis for because we haven't really been given a true diagnosis. Like, to my knowledge anyway, all we've been told is that he was experiencing some discomfort, some inflammation in his knee, and then he got a platelet-rich plasma and a viscosupplementation injections. And basically what those two things are, they're basically used to reduce the inflammation that is within the knee. Viscosupplementation, you'll see or you'll hear a lot about, within the non-athletic population, people who have pretty good osteoarthritis in the knee, because it kind of helps lubricate the joint, which may reduce some pain, stuff like that. So with John Wall, the reason why he was originally said to be out for 2 weeks is that's how long it takes for the medication that, once it's injected, that's typically how long it takes for it to work itself into the body, work itself into the joint, and provide some of that pain relief. Neither one of those injections are really going to address the source of the inflammation, but the thought is they're going to reduce the inflammation, which will reduce the pain enough to the point where he can play.
So it's kind of like the Kawhi Leonard injury that we talked about earlier this season, where it's one of those where you really are almost sitting there and just looking at John Wall and saying, well, we gave you the injections. That's about as good as it gets. It's all about the feel now.
Right. Yeah. It's there could be something underlying in the knee. Maybe there's a little bit of, there could be arthritis. These players put a lot of poundage into their knees. It could be something like that. There could also maybe be a minus meniscus tear that's inflaming things. But without a diagnosis, it's tough to say, this is how long he's going to be out for sure. Just know that the 2 week timeline is basically for the medication, not necessarily for the injury.
All right, that's a good thing to keep in mind too, because I think when people see the 2 week timeline, they assume that he's coming back right away when that is up. And then just if you're looking at this team, in your personal opinion, Do you just have him sit out maybe an extra week? I mean, he's a star player, but they have guys like Porter who are playing really well. Bradley Beal, like I mentioned, is playing really well. You have guys, their bench isn't great, but you have guys around the roster who can make this, who can get this team wins while he's away. I think they're 3-2 since he's been gone. I believe they're 3-2 since he's been gone. And so you're not going to nosedive exactly, and they're still if the season ended today, they're still in the playoffs. They're only a game back from teams like Indiana and Philadelphia to being right there in the middle of the pack as far as playoff seeding. So I don't think you lose much ground if he's out another couple of weeks. What's your opinion on maybe his timetable? Maybe in your personal opinion, do you think they should leave him out an extra week, extra 2 weeks?
Yeah, when it comes to injuries like this, and really kind of injuries in general, I definitely fall on the spectrum of it's better to hold them out too long than bring them back too quick. Because if you bring them back too quick, you don't allow the inflammation to go down or for the tissues to heal or whatever needs to be done. You're always at an increased risk for further exacerbating that injury. Now, looking at the Eastern Conference standings, the Wizards are currently in eighth, and they're a game up on the Knicks. And looks like two games up on the Heat. So the Eastern Conference is really kind of tight in the playoff race as of right now. Luckily, it's still early in the season. There's still, you know, a long ways to go in the season. So I guess to answer your question, I would say it would probably be smart of the Wizards to err on the side of holding him out, quote-unquote, too long, you know, maybe beyond the 2 weeks that he's been given. But ultimately, it's going to come down to how he's feeling. You know, if he's able to play or cut, drive, you know, shoot without any pain in that knee. And also the Wizards kind of have to take a look at how they're doing in the standings. Like you said, they're 3-2 since he got injured, since he has been held out. So, you know, it all kind of depends on where the Wizards are currently at. You know, once it's reported that John Wall might be making his return. Luckily, with the Eastern Conference being so tight, they could probably stand to lose a few games and not be totally thrown out of the race, because even as of looking farther up the standings, they're only a game out of the 4 seed too. So everything is just so tight right now. I would think the Wizards would probably bring him back as soon as he's able to go. But like I said, you know, it might be smart to hold him out a little longer than the 2 weeks. But it's all up to how Wall's body responds to the injections.
Well, and if you're the Wizards and you're just looking down the stretch at these teams that you've got to beat out, the difference between the 8th seed and the 5th seed are not very big at all, because you have Indiana, Milwaukee, Philadelphia. Those are all teams around 13-11, 13-10, 12-10, and Washington's right there at 12-11. So really only a game and a half, really at the most, separating all these teams, two games maybe. And so, yeah, like you're saying, it's pretty tight. And with the roster that they have outside of John Wall, I think they'll be fine. Now to a team that is not doing well without their star. And to be fair, they've lost quite a few of their starters. But Blake Griffin, this fascinates me so much, because if he gets held out till the All-Star break, I really feel like this is a team that goes into full rebuild mode and they just say, you know what, we're just going to start over and try and start this thing afresh next year, because they are not winning a ton of games. Looking at the standings, they are now 8-14. They're only a couple spots out of the playoffs, but that's just because Phoenix, LA, Memphis is kind of in total total rebuild mode. Sacramento, Dallas, those teams are all not great teams, and those are kind of the bottom of the West, but they have to contend with Oklahoma. The Pelicans are playing really well. Utah's playing really well. Those are kind of the teams outside or at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff picture, and I just don't know if LA can sneak into the playoffs minus Blake Griffin if he does stay out for an extended timetable. What do you make of this? First of all, what do you make of the injury that he took to the knee?
Yeah, it's really an unfortunate thing for him. You know, he's always struggled with injuries, particularly knee injuries. And it's just kind of unfortunate that it was kind of self-inflicted, and that I think it was Austin Rivers kind of dove into his knee and caused that knee injury. You know, MCLs, they aren't as serious as ACL injuries, particularly because, you know, Griffin didn't, he didn't suffer a full tear, meaning that surgery would be required to fix it. If that were the case, he'd be done for the year, much like an ACL injury. But luckily, the MCL has a better blood flow to it than the ACL does. The ACL has basically no blood flow. So that means for grade 1 and 2 sprains, the MCL can heal itself, essentially, whereas the ACL can't. That's why you don't hear of, like, grade 1 or grade 2 ACL sprains, is because once it's even just the slightest bit compromised, it's totally useless as a structure. It needs to be reconstructed and go on from there. So, yeah, well, once Blake Griffin went down, and then you had Milos Teodosic go down, you had Pat Beverly go down, pretty much, you know, all the important, really good players on the team. Yeah, Gallinari, he just has come back recently. Yeah, they've really struggled with injury issues. And, you know, maybe another indication that the Clippers are looking to kind of blow it up a little bit is DeAndre Jordan, who hasn't had an agent in like 2 years, recently hired an agent this past week. So that might be an indication that the Clippers approached him and said, hey, we're maybe looking at trading you. Maybe you should get some sort of representation so we can get things figured out here.
Maybe that was what Wiggins was trying to do, was just pull the DJ. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So if you're – now, this is a very different scenario, not only because this team is – it's so crazy because this team literally a few weeks could decide if they're going to go for a lottery pick or a playoff spot, and this is just crazy. And it's fascinating to me. But the other thing, too, is if you're the doctor, if you're the team doctor for – if you're just Blake's doctor, or if you're the team doctor for the Clippers, and he's had, what, 500 surgeries on his lower body, do you – are you extra cautious? And is there the mindset that if this team isn't one spot out of the A seed, if they're not one game back from the A seed, come that – when the 8-week deadline comes up that they gave when he was injured – are they just going to say, you know what, nope, we're gonna keep him out an extra month? Do they go to the other extreme where if they're not right there, then they're just going to make sure that Blake has more than enough time to rest and they're going to give him maybe an extra month? And then if it does come to that, then that's when they hit full rehab mode right away?
Yeah, and the other thing facing with Griffin is that, you know, he just signed a max contract. And kind of as we alluded to earlier, his extensive leg injury or injury history. You know, I'm looking at a site here that says he's had a broken toe, right knee surgery, a broken hand, torn left quad, back spasms, staph infection. You know, he's had just a litany of different injuries. So when you're the Clippers and you're thinking, hey, we just invested $173 million into this guy, he's obviously a franchise-level player when he's healthy, but he has had trouble staying healthy in the past, you know, I think they have to look at maybe, you know, I don't think he'll be done for the year, but bringing him back slowly and, you know, at a progressed rate. And if the Clippers keep losing at this rate, they do decide to blow it up, trade DeAndre Jordan, you know, unfortunately they're just going to keep, you'd have to think they'd keep losing more games. And at that point, the tank factor comes in. You know, this is the last year before the new lottery reform takes place. So, you know, it might be in the Clippers' best interest to try and get as high a draft pick as possible, especially if they trade DeAndre Jordan and they can get, you know, maybe another first-round draft pick and really kind of stock up on assets that they could maybe look to move, you know, this offseason or next offseason or whatever to try and get more franchise players to build around Blake Griffin.
How exceptionally well would Blake have to be coming back from this injury for the doctors to want to put him back in after 8 weeks? Because to me, it feels like this is the guy – of all the players in the NBA, this is the guy you want to hold out extra time and be and lose more games instead of bringing him back early and having him sustain another injury because of the amount of injuries he's had. So how amazing does his rehab have to be for him to come back at that 8-week mark or before?
Well, I'd imagine that the team docs, you know, the team athletic trainers, team physical therapists, whatever, are using these tools that we use a lot in physical therapy, known as outcome measures. And what they do is they provide objective data, typically comparing, you know, maybe one side of the body to the other. So looking at how Griffin performs on his right knee versus on his left knee, or there's normative values that have been established through research studies and stuff. Let's say once a player scores an X score, he's good to return. Typically for knee injuries, like ACL injuries, the player has to perform at least, typically it's like 80 to 90% as well on one leg when compared to the other. So for example, there's a test where you hop on one leg for, you know, you get three hops. You measure how far you went with one leg. You do it on the injured leg, see how far you can go on that. And it has to be at least 80% or 90% as far as you did, or as far as you jumped on your good leg. So they'll use things like that to determine, you know, how close Griffin is to return, if he, you know, if he is good to return, things like that. So I wouldn't say it would have to be a necessarily amazing recovery to be back in 8 weeks. He just has to be comparable from his injured leg to his uninjured leg. So with the type of injury that he sustained, it sounds like it's probably a grade two, which means that there was maybe a little bit of tearing, but not enough to need surgery. That 2 to 3 month timeline is the typical. So I guess to answer your question, you just kind of need a typical, you know, no setbacks, slowly progressing, you know, progressing at an appropriate rate type recovery.
Gosh, I've learned more in the two shows I've done with you than I've learned all semester at MSU. I'm just going to say that right now. Get an education on Locked On Wolves. We're going to come back with a discussion about the Timberwolves, their recent win, and some closing out look at the Mavericks game after these messages. Alrighty, so moving on from injury talk to the recent victory over the Clippers that the Timberwolves had. Are they ever going to beat this team soundly without any starters? Because that was so tight again. I mean, goodness, they came back, they hit 10 threes in that one, trying to pull what they did the first time they played when they hit the 15. That was an incredibly tight game. Especially, I thought the Wolves played actually really well for almost the entirety of the game, even though in the third and fourth quarters, the Clippers actually outscored them. What do you make of this game? Is this just the Clippers feeling like they can hit any shot they want? Is a little bit of this Gallinari coming back and their defense was a little bit improved? What do you make of this game and how tight it was yet again?
Yeah, well, the first thing that comes to mind, you know, is obviously DeAndre Jordan just killed them on the offensive glass. He had like 21 rebounds or something like that, and 12 of them were on the offensive variety. So when you can get offensive rebounds when you're DeAndre Jordan, those are going to be automatic points because they're going to come as tip-ins or they're going to come as dunks. Also, Lou Williams getting extremely hot, you know.
Lou Williams kind of just players. Plays the Timberwolves really well.
Right, yeah, and like him and Jamal Crawford are kind of on the same variety. You know, they're the kind of player that when they're cooking, you know, you don't want to be playing against them, those microwave type players. So part of the reason why it was close was because, you know, DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams were doing the things that they do best. You know, and when you have a bunch of injuries and your best players out, you need those players to do those kind of things. The other thing is, you know, I think we're just going to have to get used to these Wolves games being, you know, maybe closer than what we'd ideally think they should be. A lot because that's just kind of how the Wolves offense is, you know, and defense is predispositioned to performing at this point. You know, we know the story by now. They don't shoot a lot of threes. They like to get to the free throw line. And, you know, when games get tight, especially in the fourth quarter, you see the refs not blowing the whistle as much. And you see teams like the Clippers, when they have to come back, they're going to start shooting more threes. And when a person like Lou Williams gets on fire, you know, the three is greater than two. You know, that math adds up pretty quickly.
I I had an interesting experience last night, and I think this happens a lot throughout the course of a Wolves season. I felt like it kind of happened a little bit last season, especially now with Jimmy Butler on the team. It happens. I had a friend who's a sports guy. I respect his sports opinion. He's not one of those blind fans, you know, who's just going to yell and scream about whatever's happening just to yell and scream about it, right? He actually knows what's going on in games. But he texted me last night, I believe it was around the fourth quarter, and he said, Wiggins has just got to get out of this slump and he is nowhere to be seen. Wiggins had 16 points last night, and he shot 43%. Now, granted, we're used to him putting up 21, 25 points in a night, but he still had 16 points and shot well. And his defense was pretty sound. He had some slip-ups, but he had a solid defensive night as far as a Wiggins defensive night goes. And he put up double-digit points, and he didn't shoot inefficiently. Why is it that when Wiggins doesn't put up a really exceptional offensive night, do you think fans start to want his head a little bit? I mean, one night where he has 16 points and shoots 43%, that should be a solid night for a player.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of it comes from that, you know, Wiggins and Jimmy Butler and even Taj Gibson, like, and Jeff Teague even, like, these players' offensive games aren't that aesthetically pleasing. You know, they don't have that wow factor like Zach LaVine, you know, having such a pure stroke and can jump so high, you know, or like a Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, those type of players. You know, the things that Taj Gibson does, all he does is he just bullies people down in the post. You know, he'll shoot the occasional jumper, but he's looking for offensive rebounds and getting buckets close to the hoop. You know, Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler, they rely on the mid-range a lot. Jeff Teague, he does a lot of dribbling, and then he'll decide to shoot or pass, and by that time, you know, end of the shot clock, somebody has to chuck something up. You know, the way that all of them play, they don't really have, you know, watching them, it's not, like, super exciting, you know? They just kind of go in, they grind it out, they take questionable shots at time, but at the end of the night, you see they put up, what, 117 points or whatever it was last night.
Yeah, 113. You know, like,
113. Yeah. So like, it's the whole like, the sum of their parts is just like not that aesthetically pleasing, or you know, their parts aren't that aesthetically pleasing, but the sum of their parts has been a top 10 offense. It's one of those things where the eye and the mind don't totally mesh. It seems like something is off, but at the end of the day, they're putting up a whole lot of points and they're a top 10 ranked offense. It's kind of tough to describe.
Yeah, I just think that this offense, I think people still are getting used to the fact that this offense requires one or two players that have a really great night and other players to be willing to give up shots for them. Like Towns had 21 points and you had all the starters have double digit points, and Teague actually had a solid night. He had 19 points, 7 assists. And so not every night you can have a guy go for 25 points, because sometimes you got to give it to a hotter hand. Sometimes you got to be able to pass it out. And I talked about this with Mitch too. Jamal Crawford wanted some more shots in this series. It seemed like he wanted to put up a few more points than maybe before. He was calling for the ball a little bit more. He took 10 shots the other night. And so you just got to be able to give up shots. And I think Wiggins is in a really nice spot where he's perfectly willing to shoot the ball 23 times, or he's perfectly willing to have a little bit quieter of a night. And if 16 points is his quiet night, I'm going to take that for sure. I'm going to take 16 points for sure. Also, you mentioned Taj Gibson. He's up to 11 double-doubles this year. That's something to watch for, just quietly putting together some really solid double-double performances. He had the 16 points and 14 boards the other night.
Yeah, he even had a double-double in the first half last night. And going back to the sacrificing comment, you know, teams like the Warriors and the Rockets, like, the players on those teams have to make similar sacrifices as well. It's just that within the flow of their offense, they're giving up, you know, as a collective, they decided to, you know what, we'll give up the mid-range shots, we'll shoot threes. When it's not your night, you know, stand in the corner, sh- shoot a three or cut to the hoop and get a dunk and a layup or something like that, you know? And I think the Timberwolves are still trying to fill that out, you know? And Andrew Wiggins, when he's not connecting on shots, he goes to what is comfortable for him, which is a mid-range shot, you know? So
yeah, no, yeah.
And that's what makes it, you know, kind of frustrating or, you know, maybe not as aesthetically pleasing for a lot of fans is that, you know, when a player on the Warriors isn't feeling it and they go to something that's comfortable, that shot that's comfortable for them is a three-pointer. So even if they're having an off night, they still put up ridiculous numbers because three is just more than two, you know. So, but when Wiggins or Jimmy Butler is feeling uncomfortable, they go to the mid-range. When Towns is feeling uncomfortable, he tries to drive to the hoop and uses athleticism, which gets him in offensive foul trouble frequently. So, you know, they're just trying to figure those things out still. And I think a lot of the times that takes more than not only the quarter of a season, but it takes more than a season. You know, the Warriors, the Rockets, you know, the teams that are at the top of the division, they weren't built overnight. You know, they obviously have outstanding talent, you know, all-world talent, all-time talent. But, you know, that Rome wasn't built in a day. So as frustrating as, you know, maybe the Timberwolves' 15-11 start is, you know, the fact of the matter is that at the end of the day, we're a quarter into the first season of this iteration of this Wolves team, and they're on a 47-win pace. I know, yeah, that's kind of a glass-half-full type viewpoint at things, but, you know, I think as the season goes on, we're going to see things get better. They're going to get more comfortable with each other. And then I think, you know, maybe next year we'll see even more improvement. They'll be more comfortable. And, you know, it's just going to be, you know, it might just be a gradual build with this team where, you know, it's not like one day they're bad, one day they're good. It's just a kind of a consistent improvement. And we'll see what happens.
And let's be honest, with the raw talent they have on this team, they might just end up falling into 45 wins this season. And then it looks a lot more crisp of a product coming next season.
Right. And yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying on Twitter, you know, like it's not like this team isn't that fun to watch, or, you know, the wins haven't been that fun to watch. But, you know, I'd take ugly winning in spite of themselves, kind of, and, you know, 45 wins over looking who should be our next draft lottery pick, any like 10 times out of 10.
Absolutely.
I share some of the frustrations. I agree, it's not the prettiest basketball at times, but heck, I'll take 47 wins in a playoff spot any day over another lottery pick, even if it is ugly and not all that pleasant to watch.
All right, after a quick break here, we're going to just take about 1 or 2 minutes to do an early preview of the Mavericks game after this break. All right, so the Mavericks are the next game on the Timberwolves docket. This is a bad team. We've talked about them before. The last time they played, they did stun the Timberwolves a little bit in the first half, but then the Timberwolves came roaring back with a really great second half and beat them pretty soundly. Do you expect just guys like Teague, Towns, Wiggins, these kind of guys to have really big nights? I feel like this is one of those nights where maybe Jimmy Butler has like 10 or 11 assists and Wiggins and Towns have 20-some point games.
Yeah, I think it could be a big night for somebody at least, just because, you know, the Wolves played last night and Wednesday. They don't play again until Sunday, so the four nights of rest, something like that. So they should be pretty refreshed and ready to go. Plus, it's going to be the first game of a 5-game homestand.
Yeah, you get all that rest and you're at home.
Right, exactly. So, you know, they have everything working for them. The Mavericks, they're kind of a weird matchup for the Wolves, because I think they have the talent in the right spot to give them trouble, but they just don't have enough of it to maintain that trouble over 48 minutes, you know, kind of, yeah, like what we saw last time. They gave him trouble in the first half, but ultimately the Wolves pulled away. You know, Harrison Barnes, he's a fine player, but, you know, if he's got to go against Butler and Wiggins, and, you know, they have Wesley Matthews, where, you know, he can shoot from three and he can defend either Butler or Wiggins, but, you know, those two just aren't going to be enough to propel them past the Wolves. You know, over the 48 minutes, I would suspect that Butler and Wiggins would be able to outperform them. You know, Dennis Smith Jr. is a rookie, and Jeff Teague should, you know, be able to perform okay against him. Dirk is Dirk at this point. You know, we're just kind of watching a legend in his final days. But, you know, I, in an ideal world, you'd think the Wolves wouldn't be able to have too much trouble with the Mavericks.
Yeah, and I can't remember who I was talking with on this podcast before, but we did mention how it just feels like this is the Mavericks have some interesting pieces. I don't know if all of them are great, but they have some interesting pieces. Dirk is a Hall of Famer. Dennis Smith Jr. I think is somebody who is a really great talent. They have a bunch of guys who are good in isolation, maybe, but they just are a weird kind of team. They're a strange starting five to put all on the floor together that I don't think necessarily works that well. And so that's why you see them have a really great quarter, but the Timberwolves are the ones who, or most teams really are the ones, are going to outlast them just because they have these weird pieces that don't exactly fit. And so they have the capability of playing well for a little bit, but they're not going to play well for an entire game. And to be honest, how this team has 7 wins, I have no idea. It blows my mind.
Yeah, right. Like I could see on a night to night basis, them having the talent to, you know, give some pretty good teams trouble. You know, especially if Harrison Barnes gets hot, or you know, Dennis Smith Jr.
He's
a good player, right? Yeah, I honestly think that they might be that they're better than the. I think they're better than the 7 wins that they have. I don't know how much better, but if you were to tell me that they beat a team of the Timberwolves caliber, I wouldn't be totally shocked. But in the same breath, I would say that you'd think that the Timberwolves would be able to handle them off of 4 days rest, you know, at home. They just have too much talent to struggle too much against a team like the Mavericks.
You need Wesley Matthews and Harrison Barnes to really catch fire from outside. And then you need Dennis Smith Jr. to be playing off that with a really great drive game. And that's really the only way they can win, is if two, like Harrison Barnes and somebody else, just anybody else goes like 14 or 20 from outside or something crazy like that. And then Dennis Smith Jr. is able to play off of their outside shooting to really hurt a team by driving. Cause right now you can just flood the paint when he drives in, because you can let him pitch out all the time and not many guys are going to be able to knock it down consistently. But if you have the only way they really are able to go over the top and win is if they have guys who are really hitting from outside and then opening up everything in the middle for Dennis Smith to really drive in and hurt a team through the middle of the paint.
Right. Yep. You need Matthews to get hot, you know, maybe even Yogi Ferrell to get hot. I'm just looking at their stats now. Dirk is almost at a 50-40-90 season. That's crazy.
Really? Oh my gosh.
He's only playing 25 minutes a game, but he's at 45.8 field goal percentage, 42% three-point percentage, and 90% free throw percentage.
Gosh, he's such a stud.
Insane.
Wow. All right. Well, as we head out here, do you have anything to plug, sir?
Check out my latest piece at A Wolf Among Wolves. I recap the win last night against the Clippers. I also recently wrote a post speculating if the Wolves should go after DeAndre Jordan or Nerlens Noel, who, you know, it was just announced, I think it was yesterday, that he's going to be out for a few weeks with a thumb surgery. So that probably throws a wrench in some of those plans for the immediate future anyway. But check that out. Otherwise, I think that's about it.
All righty. Well, that is it for us. Thank you for coming on, Lucas. I will make sure that you are not gone for such a very long time. This time around, we'll have you back on the podcast real soon.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.